women who have been in marriages for a long time have repeated a certain kind of dance of relationship for a long time, there is an unlearning that needs to happen, which goes beyond just dating. So you can date and you can meet a healthy, wonderful person, but if you don't know the dance steps to a healthy relationship, you can meet the most wonderful man, and somewhere along the way, you'll step on his toes, he'll step on your toes, and you will both not be able to make the dance of the new relationship work.
This is episode number 594 with Sade Curry, the how-to guide on dating after divorce. Hi, everybody. I'm Sandy Weiner, and welcome back to Last First Date Radio, where we believe it is never too late to go on your last first date. And to support you on your journey to lasting love, I've written two books. The first is Becoming a Woman of Value, How to Thrive in Life and Love. And this book is for women who want to succeed in all areas of life and love. And it really deals with core confidence and building your core confidence. Really great stories and tips. Each chapter has an exercise for you to work on. And the second book was released on Valentine's Day of 2023. And this book is called Choice Points in Dating. I wrote this book to empower people to make healthier decisions, healthier choices at every state of dating and relationships. And you can find them both on Amazon for Kindle or paperback. This week's tip on becoming a woman of value is step number one, love yourself first. We get told to love ourselves by so many experts out there. And what does it mean to love yourself? Well, in my opinion, loving yourself means that you honor and value yourself, that you know your standards and know your boundaries and know what your needs are. And when you know all those things, you can work really hard at not abandoning yourself for any person, any job, any relationship. So my challenge to you this week is to love yourself first. Before I bring Sade, my guest, on, I want to invite you to join my Facebook group. It's called Your Last First Date. We are a group of about 4,000 women. I have seven amazing monitors who help me run this group. It is extremely valuable and different from other groups out there. We are not a group that comes on and complains constantly about how horrible dating is, how horrible men are. This is a group that supports you to grow on your journey to lasting love. And so if you are interested in self-growth and interested in a positive learning place, join us at Your Last First Date. And now for my guest. Sade Curry is a dating coach for divorced women, and she's the host of the Dating After Divorce podcast. She is a certified in trauma coaching, feminist coaching, and life and relationship coaching. She teaches women strategies for going through divorce with emotional balance, healing, rebuilding, and finding love again. And she is remarried to Kent Curry, and they live in St. Louis, Missouri. So Sade, you remarried after your divorce. Tell us how you met Kent and what led to getting married again.
Yes, thanks for asking, Sandy. My journey to getting married again was really surprising in many ways. I thought it would take me 5 years after my divorce to find someone that I wanted to settle down with. I had been on the dating scene for about 9 months before I made a shift in the way I dated. So really all the same things that everyone generally experiences on the dating apps and off the dating apps happened to me. Getting ghosted, you know, what they call future faking, where a guy might tell you all these glorious things that you love and you think a future is actually going to happen, but it didn't happen. And so I had all of the ups and downs on the dating apps, which I thought it would be really easy. I thought I'd get on there, there'd be a guy, and I'd ride off into the sunset. But 9 months into that journey, about 9 or 10 months, I thought, okay, what I'm doing isn't working. I obviously have no idea how to do this. And so I took a step back and decided to say, okay, what if I did this sort of more holistically? What if I wasn't just trying to go out there and find a partner, but I was trying to figure out how to create community, how to socialize, how to date in the way we encourage our teenagers to just, they're not thinking about getting married. They're just dating and having fun and going out. And so I thought, well, if I do take a step back in that way, it might take me 5 years to find someone, because at this point I'm not just like looking for someone. And then I also felt that the environment I was in didn't have a lot of like-minded people. So I said, okay, considering those odds of what I'm looking for, let's just give it 5 years. And that really helped me relax. I was still dating, I was still actively dating, but it was so much more relaxed. When I matched with a person on the dating apps, the thought that I might marry that person stopped occurring to me. I stopped thinking about them as a potential spouse or potential partner. I was like, this is just someone that I'm going to have a very fun date with. And I started planning my own dates. I had a running list of places I wanted to go in St. Louis, where I live, which is a really fun city. We've got a lot of great places to go. And so if I matched with someone who wanted to go out, I was happy to suggest something I wanted to do, a restaurant I wanted to try. And once I relaxed into that, dating became a whole lot more fun. And weirdly, I became better at it because I wasn't relying on the man to move the dates forward or do anything. I was just having a ball. And because I was better at it, I was meeting more people faster, getting to first dates faster. I met Kent on Bumble, I would say within about 6 months of making this shift. And I had actually taken a break. Even within those 6 months, I took a little break just to date in person. So I was off the apps for about 3 months. I went to conferences, dated people I met in person, came back on the apps, I believe January of 2018. And then I met him February 23rd of 2018 on Bumble. It was really quick. We matched on a Saturday morning. I had this really amazing meditation in the morning, dropped my teen kids off at their activities, and I was driving home. And just within that flow and within that like calmness of mind and non-attachment to anything happening, I thought, I wonder if I should change the age range. So I was about, I think I was 43 at the time, and I had my age range going up to 50. And I thought, I wonder who's lurking in the early 50s. And so I got home that Saturday morning, I opened up the app, shifted the date, and immediately matched with Kent. Unknown to me, the night before, he had joined the app for the very first time at 2 in the morning that Saturday morning. And so he had swiped right on me. I swiped right on him at 10 a.m. The day after. And then we just started having this conversation that went all day. And so because I was so much more comfortable asking for dates, I said, hey, do you want to meet up tomorrow? There's this really great Korean restaurant. And so we met up for dinner that Sunday night, and the rest is history.
Wow. Well, I love so many things that you shared. I think so many of us can relate to all the pressure we put on ourselves, especially after divorce, and you have no idea how to navigate the apps, and you believe people when they say they're going to do something and then they lie to you. And it's like shocking in the beginning. This is not what dating was like when we were younger. And then you kind of get the hang of it. And I went through a similar thing where I put so much into each person I was meeting, and I would build up so much about who they were and make this fantasy about maybe that's my future husband. I had one person where we talked on a Saturday night for the first time, and we had this beautiful conversation. And then he started sending me emails. This is a long time ago. He's sending me emails. We didn't have texting then. And then we're calling. I think we exchanged like 30 emails within a very short period of time. He lived about an hour, a little over an hour away. And so between our work schedules and the distance, it took a little bit of planning to find a time to meet. And finally, when we met that day, I mean, I was positive he was going to be my husband. And we met, and it was awful. I couldn't even talk to him in person. We had built up this craziness that made no sense at all in person. It was all projection and hope. And so, it takes a while to navigate. And each one of these, if you're learning, hopefully, and growing, you're not putting so much pressure on each one as it has to be the one, my future partner, my future husband. And so you meet this guy and you already were chill, you had been living your life, and I love that you had dates planned because I mean, that's what it's all about. Like it should be fun. It should be an adventure. And so you met him, and then it goes fast because you already were clear about what you wanted and who you were, and you had taken all the pressure off.
100%. I was very clear about who I wanted. And I want to talk about that a little bit because sometimes there's a little confusion around making a list around who you want. So I had made lists, multiple lists. And I think at this stage of my dating, I realized how to make a list that actually worked for me because I would make a list, I would meet a man who matched that list, and it would be nothing like what I truly wanted. In fact, I wanted nothing to do with some of the men who exactly matched the list that I had. So I learned to eventually make a list. It had about 60 attributes, Sunny, so it was really long, but I used less of the external attributes that I had been using before to judge people and more of the experience I wanted to have with the person. And so I did have, certain things like, well, I want them to be tall because I'm almost 6 feet tall. It would be nice if I wasn't looking down at them. So I did have a few of those things, but I was more interested in how I felt around the person. So I wrote things like, we laugh a lot together. I wrote, we can enjoy an evening by the fireplace with both of us reading a book. My husband now, my current husband, reads 140 books a year. So he more than met that requirement. I wrote things like they like to travel, but not just, well, we get on a plane and we go on vacation, but we actually like to explore cities together, explore ideas together. And so when I saw Kent's profile, he was standing beside this, what looked like a really old building, like a historical building. There were no signs. I love historical buildings. And just that feeling of like, oh, this looks like possibly someone who has an interest in history because they're standing by this building, like they wanted to capture that, drew me to him where other items might not have. So I learned to make a list and get clear on the smaller experiences I wanted to have with my future partner, like little things. What a day in the life with that person might feel like. And it wasn't so much about what they earned, even though, for sure they had to have their own income. But it was a lot less about that than what were we doing together? What did the life look together? And so my list then comprised of what that person would need to be or act like or enjoy for the life that I wanted to come together.
I think people get really stuck on the list. And I have seen people with requirements that are ridiculous. And sometimes it's just like an inch shorter than you thought, or it's somebody who lives a little further away, or is younger than you thought, or is older than you thought. Like you expanded your age range because it matters less than how you feel and the day to day. I mean, if you think about the people in your life who elevate you, who you enjoy hanging out with, your friends, your good friends, they have those core values in common. And it's, whenever I would have a party and I would look at the friend base, and they're all from different walks of life and different parts of my life, and they all had things in common. They all shared common sense of humor. They all shared creativity. They all shared certain core values that were important to me. And so I think we do this unconsciously in our other parts of our lives, but we don't always do it in dating because we have this crazy list that is based on society. It's based on Disney. It's based on things that are not real. And that felt sense. I was just telling my daughter that because she had been dating somebody and they broke up and she was really sad. And I said, but now you have a felt sense of how you want to feel again, because this is a guy who treated you really well and you enjoyed being with him. You enjoyed cooking with him, some of the things that you're saying.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's so missing in our education. just in life education, how to, and I know, I don't know if you were educated by Disney and the movies on how to choose a partner. My entire education came from television, and not helpful at all. I think there are these little nuances and ideas and understandings that are missing, just because I think many cultures haven't taken the time to teach what it means to choose a partner and how to choose a partner, and what you're, telling your daughter, how to recognize the felt sense that you're looking for, and then how to recognize it when you have it with someone else, and the fact that you should be looking for that. I had no idea that I should be looking for that when I was young.
Who, how many of us do? I mean, I think not only do we not grow up with healthy relationship skills, but we don't witness healthy relationship skills. And in our family of origin and other families, it's very hard to witness, especially if people argue ineffectively or not at all in front of you. You don't know how to resolve conflict. You don't know that healthy relationships have conflict. And, so all of these things are really why we do what we do here and help people to have healthier relationships. Let's talk about the modern dating scene a little more, because you brought up some of the things that you experienced, like ghosting and future faking. What else in the modern dating scene have you seen that is causing people to not want to date, to have so much anxiety? What are some of those things?
So I think the modern dating scene has been very negatively impacted by the pickup artistry movement. And I believe that was the 90s. I'm not for sure exactly when the years that that was a big thing. There were books written about how to pick up women. And so the entire goal was for men, younger men, 20s, 30s, to build their confidence by basically convincing a woman to sleep with them. And then the scorecard was how many women you could convince to, have sex with you. And I didn't realize how big this movement was. I'd heard of it, and I thought it was like a little thing, but apparently this has impacted, just thousands and thousands of people. And the ideology sort of seeped into relationships. And I think that we're dealing with the after effects, even though I think largely we all agree pickup artistry is not a good idea. Both men and women, and I think we all agree that this is not a good idea. However, the ideas are still out there and being passed along. And so the modern dating scene is full of sort of ways to get to a goal that is just shy of real intimacy or shy of real connection. I think some women or people socialized as women are looking for attention on the apps. I have talked to multiple women who will join a dating app just for the high of having someone show interest. And then I'll say, so when they message you, what did you do? They're like, no, I didn't message them back. I just wanted to know that I was still attractive and someone might still want me. And so where I think the underlying desire that's harming us is a sense of value coming from being wanted, rather than an understanding of true connection, intimacy, and the benefits, and that they require some work and openness and vulnerability, and just having a larger number of people being willing to be open in that way. And so there's sort of this like, even people who do want true intimacy are worried that they're meeting people who don't want intimacy. People who don't want intimacy are like, oh, this is a field of people that I can pick up and hang out with. And so there are a lot of games that are happening. Women are playing games of, I need a man who's going to fulfill my fairy tale fantasy. I need my Prince Charming, because when I get my Prince Charming, then I'll feel better. And then I'll have what I want, and then I'll be worthy. And so little games, and I played too. One of them was I would go intentionally late for a date. And actually, I did this up until my last first date when I met Kent, because I had read somewhere that, okay, there are these guys that aren't great, they have terrible tempers, and so you need to go late and see what his response is, and you will tell from his response if he's a good guy or not. Which, of course, that's terrible, terrible advice that I did not know at the time, because a man can respond wonderfully because he wants to have sex with you. Because he's realized, oh, if I just don't do any of these, I'll just have sex and I'll be, you know, I'll be good. So I just need to smile through whatever she does. And you can then also do something to a good guy with that, like I did, where I kept him sitting and sweating bullets on his first date. This was his first date from the apps. He'd been on other dates. And he was afraid he was going to be stood up. And I really, really regret that because I was playing games to keep myself safe and to make myself feel better. And so there are all these little games, this ghosting, future faking. There are, a lot of people I work with do this to keep themselves safe is prove to me, the prove to me game, right? So they're, sometimes they're even 6 months in a relationship to some with someone, and they still want that person to prove to them that they're the real deal. So I'll talk to people who will say, I won't say I love you first, or I won't message them back until 3 days, or they have to reach out first. Just little things that don't create connection, don't create a human bond, which is what we're all looking for. But we all play these games because we're trying to keep ourselves safe. We don't want to get hurt. We want to be vulnerable. And what I would say to that is we have to learn to be open to a little bit of being the possibility of being hurt. And knowing that being hurt, if a person does ghost you, you won't die. If they do decide that, you know, not to say I love you back, if you said I love you first, it's okay, it'll hurt. But that's the growth. That's, I think, the maturity that we're missing and the skill of creating connection that we might be missing.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Amazon Music Unlimited. You can listen to over 70 million songs and thousands of playlists and stations. Plus, you can now stream your favorite podcasts like Last First Date Radio. You can listen to any song, anytime, anywhere, on any of your devices. Get Amazon Music Unlimited for free for 30 days. Just head on over to getamazonmusic.com/lastfirstdate to learn more and claim this offer. You mentioned the pickup artist industry. I remember when my son was starting to date, he was following a lot of that because he thought it would help him with confidence. Now, he didn't do those things and go to pick up women just to have sex, but he did take some of the tips, which were good, about how to have more confidence when you're out there talking to women. But I think that and the porn industry that has led us to think that sex is pornography, which is not true. And people really are uninformed. And I think that the other part that you brought up about looking for attention and validation through the apps. I mean, my daughter was doing that in the beginning when she was first on apps. She had like 20 men talking to her and she never met any of them or talked to them on the phone. And I'm like, what are you doing? You know, is this just an ego boost? Because it's really not, it's not very fulfilling. How are you enjoying this? So, you know, it took a lot of courage for her to finally go on dates with strangers. You know, I think it is, it is a big risk, you know, but you also talk about making men wait. I think we're taught so many bad advice, so much bad advice from so many experts who say, do this, don't do that, wait 3 days, wait 60 days, wait 90 days to have sex. Like who does this? Like, you know, it's random and it doesn't lead to connection. I do understand, you know, the need for speaking up, telling somebody your standards, letting them know sex without monogamy doesn't work for me. You know, those kinds of things are direct communication, but just playing a game and being a tease, don't do that. I mean, you specialize in dating post-divorce. What are some of the unique challenges that women face when they're dating after divorce?
One of them is being in an unhealthy relationship dance, is sort of how I like to say it. Many of the women I work with have been in marriages or relationships for a very long time. So 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. I was, my first marriage was 17 years before we separated, and then another 3 years before the divorce was finalized. So 20 years altogether of me being in this dance with this person. And it doesn't matter if only one person is unhealthy or toxic or, mentally ill, both people will have, for the dance to work and to have worked that long, both people become unhealthy in different ways. You can't dance with someone if both of you aren't in step. And so, for women who have been in marriages for a long time or have repeated a certain kind of dance of relationship for a long time, there is an unlearning that needs to happen, which goes beyond just dating. So you can date and you can meet a healthy, wonderful person, but if you don't know the dance steps to a healthy relationship, you can meet the most wonderful man. And somewhere along the way, you'll step on his toes, he'll step on your toes, and you will both not be able to make the dance of the new relationship work. And I saw that in myself. I had done a lot of work before I got married again. And still, there were little moments where I caught myself thinking in unhealthy ways about my current husband, or thinking in unhealthy ways about our conflicts that we had. I mean, luckily, my marriage now looks, and it's like an about face from my first marriage. However, we still have conflict. We still have to negotiate a lot of things. And I had to learn how to negotiate in a healthy way, how to have conflict in a healthy way. I had to really work with other professionals and doing my own work to not jump to the worst case scenario whenever something went wrong. And so very few women who have divorced come to dating or a remarriage or a new partnership without some unhealthy dance that they've learned. And so that's a unique challenge. A lot of that comes out when they start dating, a lot of ways they try to keep themselves safe from being with the person they were before. I don't want a man like my ex-husband. And so their entire list is made up of attributes that are what they think are the flip side of their ex-husband, but it turns out to be this other extreme list that keeps them really falling for people who are pretending or people who are not good for them, or looking for someone who doesn't exist. And so they have to sort of readjust what life looks like. I teach something I call an a good man scavenger hunt, where I tell women to just go out into the world and look for what healthy men look like. Now, we're not looking for them to date them. They could be married, they could be your uncles, your brother, for some people, their sons are the healthy men in their lives. Younger, wherever, anytime you see a man acting in a healthy way, pause and take a good look at what a healthy man looks like and start to absorb sort of like you said, a felt sense of being in the presence of someone healthy and what that looks like, because many women don't have no idea. My parents got divorced when I was young. Their marriage was very unhealthy. My first marriage was very unhealthy. So I had very little experience in witnessing healthy relationships, healthy interactions. And so I went on the scavenger hunt for myself, and now I teach it to other people. And where I said, what does he really look like to be around a healthy man? What do they do differently? This is not about them getting your door or bringing you flowers. Like, how do they talk? How do they stand? So in my workplace, I was like observing the men around me all the time. I'll give you an example, which really warms my heart. We had little cubicles, five to a row on one side, five to a row on another side. And at one period at this office, there was an older gentleman who sat across from me. And every day at lunch, he would call his wife for about 15 minutes. And literally, he would pick up the phone and say, "Hello, cutie." And they'd have this conversation. And I was like, well, this is amazing. I want that. And I just took in the feeling of someone calling me just to check in on me. And I did the same with the younger men who were married, the ones who were not married, at church, wherever I was. I absorbed that and used it to learn what it would be like to interact in a healthy way.
That's a great idea. I think so many of us don't have any clue what healthy looks like, and our attraction is to unhealthy. And so we feel the hormones going, and we feel, oh my God, this is it. And we ignore all the red flags, and we just go, oh my, this is amazing. So when you have more experience with what healthy looks like, and what healthy feels like, and what healthy people do, it just makes for an easier time when you're out there dating because you can recognize it. And I love that, the scavenger hunt. So, and you say it's important to look for green flags rather than red flags. Is that connected to your scavenger hunt?
Very much so. Especially as I've worked with women over the years now, and I started out like helping them identify red flags. And I realized that even after we had eliminated all of the red flags, some men that, we were looking for were still not right. Not because they were toxic or unhealthy or like, unsafe in any way, but they didn't have certain attributes that were required for a good relationship. So they were good people, right? They could be your coworker or a vendor or even a friend, but they didn't have the tools that were going to be needed for a relationship. Not every good person is good for you as an individual. Not every good person is skilled in relationships. And so when we look for red flags, which I think I started out with that as well early in my dating, we're looking to keep ourselves safe from danger, which is what the human brain is just primed to do that. We want to stay safe. We want to preserve ourselves. So we do that so easily. But the assumption is that if I can go down 60 red flags of a narcissist, and the person doesn't have any of those, and they'll be a good spouse. What we found was that some of these people were maybe not a fit with core values, or they were good people, but they were too introverted to carry a really an intimate relationship with another person. They were anxious in themselves and insecure in themselves, so they couldn't be a generous giver, or they were addicted to pornography, or even use pornography just enough that they didn't develop the actual skill in giving a partner pleasure or receiving pleasure from a partner. So these were all the things that they weren't extreme things, but they were just, well, does this person feel, is this person comfortable having a conversation with the rest of your family? So when both of you are together, everything's wonderful. But then you go to dinner with your family, and suddenly they become a bundle of nerves. They can't get a word out, or they dominate the conversation. That is so a green flag there would be, hey, do they have social skills? Do you feel like you grow when you're around them? Are they generous? So a person, I mean, a person has a right to keep all of their resources to themselves. However, a person who wants to be in a relationship needs to have the skill of sharing their resources with another human being. Do they look out for you? And so there's some elements that are required to actually be a team with someone. For a team to pull together, both people have to have each other's back. So a green flag is, does this person actually anticipate your needs in some way? When an event is happening or you're planning something, do they think about your comfort? Or do they just say, well, I've taken care of my own stuff for this trip that we're going on. I'll see you at the airport. Or are they, hey, do you have everything you need? Can I pick something up for me from the grocery store? Are they considerate? Are they kind? Do they actually put out effort to care for the people around them? So those are some green flags to look for beyond just making sure the person isn't toxic.
Yeah, that's great advice. I think that people have red flags glasses on often. And it is that whole stay safe, don't be vulnerable, stay safe. And if I look for all the qualities that my ex had, then I can stay safe. Or if, my ex was a lawyer, and so now I will never date a lawyer again. Like that makes no sense. And people will negate people for the most ridiculous reasons and stay with people who should they should never be with. And so looking for these things, social skills are really important. I married somebody with poor social skills. He had a lot of social anxiety, but he was a performer. So on stage, he was this gregarious, spontaneous, really fun, sexy guy. And off stage, he was reserved, did not ever want to do conflict, just went into himself, barely had any friends. And I'm a very social person. So that's an important thing for me this time around is to find somebody who is social and likes people and can engage with people. So it's important to look at what's real and what's underneath those surface things that we think are important. Let's talk about online dating a little more because most people are dating online, and if they're not, it's a really important way for people to meet partners. I'm in the midst of teaching my online dating course for the 10th time because since the pandemic, the 10th time, because it is such an important course and such an important skill to have. So if somebody wants to create a dating profile and attract a partner that would be compatible, what are some of your tips for that?
So I really have one tip, but that one tip has so many layers to it. My tip is use your core values to create your dating profile. And so that's what I teach. I'm like, we start with who you really are, your core values. And of course, core values show up in many different ways, and we explore the ways they show up in your life. And then we build on that to identify the kind of person who would fit in with you. So if you are this kind of person, which, I work with divorced women, and so that's a piece that's often missing, is that clear identity, that clear self-identity. Many of them have spent time raising children, caring for the ex-husband and the family, and have lost their sense of self. So we explore the sense of self and say, who are you really underneath all of these labels? What does an amazing life, for you feel like, not in an airy-fairy, but in a very practical way? And then what would a relationship, so if you take the life that feels good to you, and then we add in a human and it still feels good to you and everything's still working, what does that feel like? And we do all of that before then finding who is the person who would have matching core values, right? Whatever that, that gender is. So if you're, whatever, a man who fits in with that, if you're a woman looking for a man, a woman who looks at, fits in with that, if you're a woman looking for a woman. And so it's a little bit of a detailed process that starts with who you are. So it never it it's different for everyone, because I read a lot of articles and people are like, well, you need these three things on your profile. You need to say these things. And when you go on the apps these days, profiles all look the same because everyone has like a standard of what they think it should look like. And so my advice to my clients is, we're going to create a profile for you that could not be superimposed on another human, because you are a unique human and we need to dig deep enough to find who you are. And then once you do that, you then create a profile based on all of that information. You pull out all the information and say, I want to attract this kind of person. This is who I am. What about me does this person need to see to know that I am the one for them? Because we don't want to attract all the men on the apps. We want to attract a few who fit into a criteria. So once you have that, it starts to look like when I was dating, I put a picture. So you have your four pictures, full body picture, the basics. I had a photograph of a book display from my local bookstore. And the book display reflected my ethnic background. It reflected my political values. And it reflected my love of reading. And so in that one photo, I told this entire story that, who would put, no one would tell you, hey, you need to put up a picture of these particular set of books on your profile. But that's what I did to attract a person that matched up to that for me. And so I tell my women that, listen, you need to have your profile needs to tell a story. That story comes from your core values. And it connects to the person you want to attract. And so you can't, there are no 10 steps to that kind of a story. Every woman is telling her own story. So that's my biggest tip. Out of that comes, what photos do you use? Let every photo tell a story. Don't just put a photo that shows how you look, because after a while, you're just another face on an app. But are you in a place that tells a story? I have a woman I'm working with who loves, she's at a concert once, at least once or twice a week. So I said, you know what? But she goes alone because she's currently single. And so she didn't have a lot of photographs of herself at the music halls. And so I said, okay, here's your assignment. You go to, the five biggest music halls in your city, have a friend take a photo of you. It's not fake because you have been to those multiple times, but we need one or two to attract the man who also goes to these music halls once or twice a week. And that will stand out. Now, whether he's for you or not, we won't know till later, but your profile will jump out to that particular man, and he won't. The man who does not want to leave his home will swipe left very quickly on you when he sees how much of an extrovert you are.
Yeah, no, telling a story is so important. People post boring profiles. They're generic. They all sound the same. Their pictures all look the same. They all wear black instead of color. Like, it's just, there's so many things that can set you apart. But that story part is people connect through story. I tell stories. I go on stages and tell stories because we connect with each other through story. And so if you have a photo that tells a story, I love the book photo. I had a profile picture where I'm reading a book. I had gone to a winery with a friend who I met actually through the podcast. We both had written books and we both had each other's books. And so we met up in California at a winery and we both sat in these big red Adirondack chairs reading each other's books, and my daughter took pictures, and then I put mine up on the dating site. And it was a funny picture because it said first date stories. And it's a good conversation starter. Tell me about a first date. Oh, you like to read. Oh, cool. Where were you? So I think, just doing something you love, an activity that you love, hiking, biking, walking with your dog. So many people just put a picture of their dog or a picture of a sunset. Who cares? I don't want to see a sunset without you in it. Or you tell me where it is, right? So there's just so many things people can do to add more context, to give more information, so that by the time you're actually talking, you already know a little bit about this person. So, Sade, what are your final words of advice for anyone who wants to go on their last first date?
Ooh, so many words, but I'll boil it down to, oh, there was always so when it comes to dating, so many words. I would say we if you're thinking about dating, or if you are dating, it's because you want the most basic human need, which is the connection with someone else. And that is, I think that's such a valid quest. And my advice would be, don't let the speed bumps along the way keep you from reaching the end of that quest, however long your quest takes, whether it takes a total of 18 months like mine did, or if it takes 5 years like I thought it would take. It's such a worthy quest. Like real true love, real human connection, real companionship, teamwork, partnership. It's just really worth the effort to learn how to date in this modern world. To learn how to change our own old patterns, our own habits that are in the way, to grow beyond where we've been, to learn new things, to practice new things, to do a few scary things. I think the end result is totally, totally worth it. So, whatever you have to do to keep going, learn, get support along the way, that's my advice. Keep going, it's worth it.
It's totally worth it. And also to learn along the way. That is an important piece because I think a lot of people just keep making the same mistakes. They have no idea why it's not working. They shut down and they lose hope. And it's important to not lose hope and to know that, every relationship is your teacher. Every date can teach you something about yourself, about dating, about men, about communication, having a little more boldness and saying, this isn't going to work for me, but it was so nice to meet you. Being able to end things, not ghost people because they've ghosted you. It's really just such important work. And I appreciate that you do this. And I know you have a free gift for anyone who is dating after divorce. Can you tell us what that is?
Yes, happy to. So I made this list for women because I realized a lot of women who were divorced were making this list of red flags or a partner list based on their exes. So I said, hey, let's start fresh with a new foundation. What are the green flags of any healthy relationship, really? What would a healthy relationship look like? Before we make any list, let's start there. And so it was really an educational piece. So it's called the 50 Green Flags of a Healthy Partner. And it's just attributes that we all want in a partner. It doesn't matter who you're looking for, who you are, there isn't a person who doesn't want these 50 things in one form or another in a relationship. And I compiled it and adjusted it and said, okay, I think these are the 50. And if you have them in some quantity or the other, now not everyone's going to be a 10 out of 10 on everything, but there's an element of all of these that are required for a healthy partnership. And so it's available for free online if you sign up for my email list. And you can use it to say, okay, I'm in a relationship. Is it healthy? I'm thinking about committing to this person. Is what we have together healthy? Or I have a partner list. Have I included some elements that are really important for me to consider before finding someone?
Great. So this the link will be in the show notes. And I know your website is sadecurry.com, and people can find your podcast, your Instagram, your Facebook, all the good stuff. Thank you so much, Sade, for coming on the show for this wonderful conversation about dating after divorce. It gives us a lot of hope and a lot of skills, which are both important.
Thank you for having me, Sandy. This has been so much fun to have this conversation with you.
My pleasure. And thanks everybody for listening today. If you love our show, please give us a high rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, here's to your last first date.
If you are ready to get unstuck, gain new tools, become more empowered, and finally find your last first date, I'd love to talk to you. Fill out an application to be considered for a complimentary half-hour love breakthrough session at lastfirstdate.com/application.